Hello, everyone. It's great to see you all. And here we go. We're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us. And this is Dr. Will Tuttle. It's March 4th, 2021. This is our World Peace Circle satsang. And I hope you can hear me okay. We do have the chat open. So if there's something technically or anything else that you'd like to communicate to me, just go right ahead. So it's great to see you all or to know your presence. Some of you, a lot of you have your cameras off, a lot of you have them on. Either way is fine. The beginning of our time together, usually I like to have a chance to just have a meditation together. So during meditation, very often it's maybe a little better to have your camera off, and all of the mics are muted, but you can press *6 if you want to say something, and you can and however you want to do it with your camera is fine, of course. So Madeline and I are traveling, and we're in southern Florida over on the west coast today. We just drove over from Miami. We were in Miami last night giving a lecture. Some of you may have heard about that. We were just thrilled. I'll just say this briefly, to hear about this new, it's not that new, but to us it was new. I guess it's 2 years old now. Vegan Sanctuary of Love. It's called Aguacate, which means avocado in Spanish, started by a Cuban couple. And it's a vegan animal sanctuary. They've got, 2 cows, about 9 pigs, some goats, ducks, geese, chickens, and other turkeys and other animals. And it's right in, they've got about 4 acres right in Miami, south of, in the southern part of Miami. And so there's lots of people there. They have a great organic vegan restaurant and lots of spiritual energy, court classes in meditation and yoga. And women's empowerment and foods and healing and all these things. It's just a tremendous energy, and everything is recycled, which is very, very enjoyable. I mean, you go onto the space and it's just wide open, and then the kitchens and the rooms, most of the rooms are recycled shipping containers. They got recycled pallets and those big spools that they use for tables. And then everything is painted with lots of bright, vibrant colors. And they have artists, I guess, went crazy. And there's signs everywhere with optimistic sayings all around. And it's, and like I say, just lots of people. I think we were there we heard about it on Saturday. We finished up at Hippocrates on Sunday, this past Sunday, and went down there Sunday and met with the people, had a wonderful dinner, and they said, well, okay, let's schedule a talk for Wednesday. So they were actually able to get a pretty good turnout. And it's so rare nowadays with COVID to be able to do a live public lecture to an enthusiastic audience. And it was really fun. And so a lot of people showed up, and we had a great vegan meal, and they have a whole stage with a sound system, and it's really very well done. So we were there last night, and then we drove across the Everglades this morning and saw lots of birds and alligators and all kinds of animals, and then took a swim in the Gulf this afternoon. And then we are staying with some friends that are vegan activists in Sarasota at the moment. We've known them for years. They've actually set up a lot of lectures for us over the years in Sarasota in this area. So it's really so great to see people finding a way, even when there's a lot of resistance. And it was very uplifting to be able to spend this last week at Hippocrates. Also, right before that, we gave some lectures and concerts there. And some of you are familiar with Hippocrates Health Institute. It's, I think, probably the premier vegan healing center, probably in North America. People come from traditionally a lot from Europe and all over the world. Now with the travel bans, it's mostly people from the United States. So we finished up about 2 months there of doing events, probably over 20 events all told. Usually we do 3 a week. So my mother is 92, and we've been spending time with her also. She's a few hours away, and she just seems to be getting better. It's an interesting. We came out because we thought she was going to pass any day, and she's actually looking better. So we'll see how that all goes, but we're probably going to be heading back to California in the next week or so. It looks like we can't stay here. We've been here for 4 months now in Florida. So anyway, that's the news. Those of you who came on while the music was playing, that last piece, I just wanted to mention it. The last piece is called the B flat piece, because that note I keep playing over and over again is a B flat note. And it's from the Islands of Light CD, which is created partly to be a companion to the book I have out called Your Inner Islands, The Keys to Developing Intuition. And so the image that, to me, is very inspiring, which I want to share with everybody because I think it's helpful in these challenging times, is the image of a piano. And piano represents music, and it represents the many notes on this musical scale. And so you're sitting at the piano, and there's 88 keys there on the piano keyboard. And so the underlying idea is that it would be really a shame to only use one of the notes, right? If I sat down to play a concert and I just kept hitting that B, say a B flat over and over again, that's all I ever played was a B flat, that one note. Pretty soon everybody would walk out, you know, because there's not much, that one note by itself doesn't have a lot of power to really move us in a deep way. And so the interesting thing is that when you look at what makes a note have real power, it's two things, actually. And it's the same, I think, for us as individual human beings, because each one of us, in a way, is like an individual note. And by ourselves, we don't have a whole lot of power. Our power really comes from these two same two things. So if we're listening to a piece of music, and we're really being moved by the melodies and the harmonies and the rhythms that we're hearing, suddenly a B-flat note can emerge in that piece of music, and we'll have tears falling, you know, or our heart will be touched. We'll feel this, oh, that note was so beautiful. So where does that come from, the power of that one note to move us so much? It comes from the other notes. You know, that's the interesting thing, really. It's all the notes together, in a sense, lift up each note and allow each note to be much more than it could be if it was all by itself, you know, isolated as a lone note. So that's one aspect, is the relationship and the support from other notes. And so that's number one. And number two, of course, is that note is being true to itself. There's that basic sort of a metaphor. If that little note, when it was a baby note, had been taught that, well, you know, B flats, nobody wants to hear a B flat. You should be an A or an A double sharp, but don't be a B flat. And so that B flat would say, oh yeah, you're right, I'll be another note. So then we wouldn't have that B flat. We wouldn't have that unique expression, that beautiful B flat note, which we really need to have sometimes. So, these principles are very easily lost in our daily life. And I see it happening all the time where, the underlying idea is that each one of us, as a unique expression of the infinite creative power of the universe, we're very often trying to copy someone else, you know, how they did it. That worked really well, so I'm going to try that. And that's okay if you think you want to try copying what somebody did that you think was helpful. But the underlying idea, I think, is that each one of us has a unique gift to share that no one else can replicate. We have our own unique experience and talents and abilities, and to celebrate that basic fact and not compete with each other or judge each other, which tends to happen so much. Compare ourselves to each other, you know, this whole comparing thing, like who do you know, how do we know who's having more influence in a positive direction than someone else? We really don't know. I mean, we have our little limited view. And you think about people that were died completely unknown. I was just thinking of this Emily Dickinson, you know, the great poet from Massachusetts in the 19th century. This guy came up to me last night at Aguacate Sanctuary of Love, where I gave the lecture, and in the very beginning, and he bought a book, actually he didn't buy the book. The woman, this is really beautiful. This woman who owns the sanctuary and runs it, she actually bought 10 books from Amazon, and the first 10 people that showed up, she gave them a book. She gave them a World Peace Diet as just a gift. So she gave him a book, and she had never even read my, she hadn't even read my book yet. So, that's the kind of wonderful, generosity that they're exhibiting at this sanctuary. I just love the sanctuary. But anyway, so, he said his name was Nemo. N-E-M-O, Nemo. So I signed, his book to Nemo, and I said, do you know what your name means? And he said, no, what does it mean? I said, well, Nemo, if you've ever studied Latin, Nemo means no one or nobody. And he looked at me kind of funny. I said, but it's a great name to have. He said, you mean I'm nobody? And I said, yeah, but that's a great thing. You know, the greatest sages of India, if you ask them, you know, who are you? They'll say, I'm nobody. Because that's when we realize that on some level, we realize then we're everyone. I mean, we get outside of the delusion of being this fundamentally separate self, this prison that we're in, where we're trying to be better than other people and compete with them. And you know, it's a total ego trip, basically, very often trying to be somebody. And so that reminded me of Emily Dickinson, who I thought, you know, the great woman poet who lived all by herself. No one ever knew she even existed. She was back in the, in her garden, and I guess she had inherited a house from her father, and she was just writing poems in her backyard and going on these very deep, profound spiritual experiences. And it was only after she died and passed away and some people went through her effects and they found this beautifully little wrapped packet of pages that she had written. She's considered the greatest female poet in the history of the United States. By many scholars. She's an incredible poet. Anyway, she was completely unknown during her time, and no one would say that she was anybody. She was nobody, but she has had a profound impact on millions of people. And, but anyway, she wrote a poem that I just love. I haven't committed to memory. It's very short, but it's called I'm Nobody. And the poem, goes like this. I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They'd banish us, you know. How boring. No. How dreary to be somebody. How public, like a frog, to tell one's name the livelong day to an admiring bog. Not a great poem. I just love that poem. I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They banish us, you know. How dreary to be somebody, how public, like a frog, to tell one's name the livelong day to an admiring bog. So she wrote that little poem, and that's the Nemo, you know, that's the Captain Nemo, you know, from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. The Nemo is nobody, and I think really in a certain sense, there's a profound spiritual truth in that when we let go of trying to always impress everybody and people around us and so forth, we really end up, that really is a mask, you know, and I'm so tired of seeing masks, I have to say. I actually heard that Fauci now has said that we have to wear masks until babies are born who actually will have a mask on their face when they're born. So we have to just keep this up until it becomes part of our DNA. That's what we have to do. So, you know, this mask thing, I mean, everybody's walking around wearing masks. I can't stand it anymore. But anyway, so, that's what the nobody and the somebody is all about. And I think the more we can let go of our cultural programming, which is really hard. That's really what veganism is about, as we all know. It's letting go of the cultural program of fitting in and going along with a narrative of violence and domination and exploitation of the vulnerable and getting in touch with our own intuition and living our own life based on the fundamental core intelligence, which is compassion and kindness to other living beings rather than seeing them as commodities to be used. So that's, you know, underlying, I think, everything is this interconnection that we have with ancient spiritual teachings that teach us, in a sense, to just play our own note, whatever that is. That gets back, you know, getting back to this B flat, the song of B flat, it's called, in the Islands of Light. The teaching on that particular island in the intuition course that I wrote in that book is to connect with our own inner unique note that is us, and then just play our song. The underlying idea is that each one of us has a beautiful song in our heart that we, when we connect with, if we sing that song, it encourages other people to sing their song. They don't have to sing our song, but to sing their own song. And I think each one of us has a way to bring the vegan message, or to bring the message of love and compassion and joy and creativity and abundance to the world. And the more we do that ourselves, the more we encourage other people to do it in their own way themselves too, to create a community that supports each other in doing that. All right, so thank you again, all of you, for joining us. And that'll be maybe just a little prologue. I'm in this room that I'm not used to. This is our friend. He's got this, you know, he makes his living with computers, and he's got these massive computer screens and all kinds of technical stuff around me, which we just got here about like 20 minutes ago. And so I'm just, you know, got set up here, and but I'm feeling very happy and grateful to be here. And I'd like to go ahead and invite all of us to join together now, and just in a time of meditation, and then come out of that, maybe have a short Dharma talk, and then respond to any questions that you may have. As you know, if you've been on this first Thursday call before, this is basically a call that's different from the third Thursday call, which is really only for World Peace Diet Circle people. But this one is more open to anyone, actually. And it's a satsang, which means community of good or community of truth in Sanskrit. And the whole idea is to just try to reconnect for 1 hour. I really don't want to go over an hour. So we're going to end this at 9 o'clock, Eastern time. And, but to connect with the deeper, the deeper wisdom that really shines, I think, all the time in our consciousness, and to let that guide us in our lives during these times when we're being constantly pressured to abandon rationality and abandon inner peace, and to become afraid and to become judgmental, and to be part of the divisions and really the problems. And I've seen this really tearing up the vegan movement and many other movements. So it's good, I think, to take some time just to affirm the bigger picture. So thank you all again for joining us. So let's go ahead and begin our time of meditation by just taking a few breaths. This is so fabulous to be able to share the space of love together, a sacred space that is made sacred by our intention, by our aspiration, by our yearning. The yearning in our heart to awaken as fully as possible to the truth that we are, to awaken and to allow the unfoldment of consciousness to flow through this unique being that we are, to be a blessing in the world, to be an authentic blessing to others. So as we breathe, let's let go of any thoughts of the past or of the future, letting go of any thoughts of what it took to just get onto this call and so forth, and being present with the beautiful expressions of love and light and awareness and compassion that are all of us joined together here, this community, kindness and caring, just breathing together and giving thanks, each one of us giving thanks for our precious human body, this physical vehicle that we have that allows us to see and hear and taste and touch and smell and think and perceive and contemplate, to love and to feel, to intuit and to appreciate to have empathy. We give thanks for every aspect of our life. We give thanks for the wonderful times that we've had of joy, of adventure, of freedom. We also give thanks for times of challenge, of perhaps of pain, knowing that all of these aspects of our life have helped us to deepen our own empathy and wisdom to become the unique expression of life that we are right now. And we give thanks knowing that the unique expression of being that we are right now is holy, sacred, and perfect, beyond perfection and imperfection. We are a manifestation of the infinite loving power that gives rise to this beautiful earth, to all the animals that are celebrating their lives here, to all the planets and galaxies, that we are completely at home in the universe, and that our life is a manifestation of the benevolent power of unfoldment and awakening that is flowing through every cell in our being and is flowing through the entire web of interconnected creation. So giving thanks for this day, this moment, this being that we are, and for all of our relationships, knowing that we're teachers and we're also students and we're learning constantly from each other, learning to let go and also learning to penetrate more deeply into the mystery of what we are. So breathing into the ancient reservoir of experience and wisdom that resides always in our heart. Giving thanks, knowing that what we are is eternal, that what we are was never born and will never die. What we are is eternal, radiant consciousness, conscious awareness, manifesting through a physical vehicle, as are all living beings, human beings, all the living beings, all animals are all expressions of infinite and eternal consciousness, expressions of love, of life's love for itself. And we can just breathe for a moment and allow ourselves to be silent and open and aware in a sense of gratitude and listening. Just listening together. Abiding in appreciation for each other. And giving thanks, knowing that the light that shines in every cell of our being is the same light that shines in all living beings and in every dimension of the cosmos. That light brings life so that our heart is beating and our lungs are breathing and billions upon billions and trillions of cells are functioning in perfect harmony so that we can fulfill our purpose for this lifetime. And I'd like to invite us for just a short time, just maybe a minute, between 1 and 2 minutes, to just sit quietly in silence. I think it's a beautiful opportunity to just listen together. Let's now take a moment before we go into the silence and just contemplate the question, what is it right now in my life that I would like to understand more clearly? what is it right now in my life that I would like to have wisdom about, or clarity about, or healing about, or greater awareness about? Just allow that open-ended question just to be open. Giving thanks for this opportunity that we have wherever we are. We're sharing sacred space-time together, and we can support each other in insights and wisdom emerging from the larger field of awareness that is our true nature, from the silence. So let's enter now into the silence and just be open to whatever emerges as we are open to that question of what is it that we would like to understand better, more clearly right now, at this moment in our life adventure. Just breathe. Great. Thank you all for abiding in the silence that connects us beyond ideas of right and wrong and this and that and self and other. And so I'd like to just invite all of us now to breathe together. And just visualize this beautiful earth as a blue and green jewel floating in space. And see this earth bathed in a white light or golden light, however it is for you, of peace, harmony, health, joy, freedom, abundance. And now with every exhalation, just breathing as we exhale love into the infinite web of relations on this earth. As we inhale, engendering the feeling of love, and as we exhale, just radiating love into all of our relations, to all of our loved ones, and for everyone, for all living beings on this earth, may all beings be happy. May all beings be free and at peace. Just breathing together and radiating a sense of loving kindness and benevolence and goodwill to every living being, wherever they are in their journey. Whether they're a human being, whatever their race or class or whatever it is in the outer level, or whether they're a non-human being, animal being of some kind, as we say, or there's so many different beings, just radiating love to all expressions of life and appreciation. Radiating compassion. Breathing and radiating compassion for all life. And breathing and radiating joy. The joy that is a bubbling spring always at the very core of our being, our true nature. When we go deep enough, will hit the infinite spring of eternal joy, joy of being itself. When our mind is quiet, we get beyond the delusions of separateness. And we just allow this sense of joy to radiate into the infinite web of relations, blessing all beings with joy, their true nature, joy of being. And finally, with peace and harmony, breathing and engendering peace and radiating peace into the world with every exhalation. Abiding in our true home of peace and harmony, abiding in love, compassion, joy, and peace. Holding each other's hands across the miles and across the time zones, and making this circle a circle that includes more and more circles. When we think of all of our friends and neighbors and colleagues and their friends and neighbors and colleagues, very soon we have a web that includes every human being and all living beings. This whole planet. So we send healing and love and liberation into the infinite web of relationship here, knowing that each one of us has responsibility for one of the nodes of this web, which is the one that we are. And that also we're connected with every single one. As we awaken, we help all to awaken. Wonderful. Okay, so just notice an inner smile, sense of being complete. We hold all of the animals in our heart, all the beautiful expressions of life that we refer to as animals. We release the human narrative of domination and exploitation of animals and allow animals to now be and always have been and always will be completely free from human domination and exploitation. We give thanks for this. And knowing that human beings are also eternally have been, are, and will be free from human exploitation. And from non-human exploitation. So we abide in our true nature, which is loving kindness and awareness. We give thanks for this opportunity of a human birth at this time, this critical time on planet Earth, for the benefit of all beings, and so it is. Okay, well, thank you all again for participating in the meditation, and these are really, I can't remember who said it, Thomas Paine, I guess, these are the times that try men's souls, that old saying, he coined that, I guess, he shouldn't have said men, but men and women, all of us. It's a time for, I think, to really deepen our understanding of our true nature and of what is happening on this planet. It's very hard to know, I think. And in the past, I've been doing a short little Dharma talk based on a chapter from the Dhammapada, which is a Buddhist text, one of the oldest ones. And last month, it was called Flowers. And kind of in the beginning of the book here, I thought I would, the one right after that is called Evil, and the one right after that is called The Sage, and I just like this one, The Sage. So I thought I'd just read and give a couple of comments, and then we can open it up for any questions you may have. I try not to go too long on this so we have time for questions, but I think there's some really good points here that can help us in our practice. And in the main idea, of course, is that our life is a practice. And like anything else, the more we practice, the better we get at whatever we're practicing. So the important thing is to practice the right things, right? If I practice hiding and being afraid, I'll be really good at hiding and being afraid. I'll become an expert at it, you know. I'll be very accomplished. Whatever we practice, we're going to become very good at. So the whole idea is to be aware of what we're going to practice and practice what we want to develop. Okay, so that, I think that's actually part of what the Buddha is saying here. So Dhammapada means Dharma path. Dharma means the teaching. So this is, again, these are short chapters. This one is called The Sage. It's chapter number 6. Like someone pointing to treasure is the wise person who sees your faults and points them out. Associate with such a sage. Good will come of it, not bad, if you associate with one such as this. Ooh, that's a hard one, right? I mean, associate with those who see your faults and point them out. Well, that sounds like, oh, that sounds kind of painful. Associate with such a sage. Good will come of it. So, you know, it's actually not necessarily, I mean, wise people can do that. Life itself will do that. I mean, you know, sooner or later, life will do that very well. If we're, so the whole idea, like the Buddha says, is to become sensitive, to be, like the great, like not a very good horse. This is kind of a speciesist metaphor, but anyway, not a very good horse. You have to beat him really hard to get him to run. He said, a very fine racehorse, you just tap him with a little tap of the whip. And the really great one, you don't even touch him at all. He just knows exactly, you know. So that's kind of the idea, is that when we get sensitive to the universe, we don't have to get hit over the head by a 2x4 all the time. We can actually perhaps be able to get guidance without having it be so painful. Okay, so that's a good one. The next one is, let one such as this advise you, instruct you, and restrain you from rude behavior. Such a person is pleasing to good people, but displeasing to the bad. I think we can figure that out. It's, again, we see this kind of thing that, you know, this is one of the chapters where he talks about right association, that it's really helpful to us to associate with those with who we would like to be more like. And I think on any spiritual path, the idea of a spiritual community and a community of veganism, for example, or spiritual awakening, is that we try to be associating with people who we feel we would like to emulate them and learn from them. And that's a beautiful thing. Then he says, do not associate with evil friends. Do not associate with the lowest of people. Associate with virtuous friends, associate with the best of people. So again, taking this in, especially I think in the early stages of our time on the path, we can easily be trampled. One of the things I've found is we really do become like the people we hang out with. So it's important for us to be aware of that. And of course, to help anyone we can, who needs help. We can, hopefully be like a tree that gets strong and grows up, and we can be shade and nurturing for others. One who drinks in the Dharma sleeps happily with a clear mind. The sage always delights in the Dharma taught by the noble ones. Irrigators guide water, fletchers shape arrows, carpenters fashion wood, sages tame themselves. So again, this is the idea of to think of yourself as a craftsperson, how a craftsperson refines their craft. You know, a musician, for example, spends maybe, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 hours every day practicing to refine their dexterity of their fingers and to understand the meaning of music and to let that flow through them. And someone who's really a craftsperson with wood will do the same thing with wood or with fabric, whatever it is. So think of the same thing for us as our life, our thoughts. You know, we can actually work with our thoughts and our emotions in such a skillful way, especially if we're challenged. So instead of just reacting, which is really what tends to happen. We think, well, he said that to me, so I got angry. So like that has to happen because, he said a bad, he insulted me, so I get angry and I yelled at him. And so the whole idea is that we, like a Fletcher crafts arrows or an irrigator guides water, we can guide the water of our emotions. We can guide the arrows of our speech, instead of just shooting somebody, we can work with that. We can fashion the wood, right, of our body and our mind and our speech. This is an amazing thing. I mean, we have the capacity. I think an authentic practice, which we can find in any religious or spiritual tradition, really has the responsibility is with us. It's self-responsibility to do the best we can with what we have, and it's workable. Whatever the situation is, it's workable. We can always learn from whatever situation we're in, and we're always in a situation, actually, because that's the perfect thing for us right now. So it's the same, to give thanks for whatever it is, even if it seems overly difficult, that there's a gift in it. And then there's a couple more here. As a solid mass of rock is not moved by the wind, so a sage is unmoved by praise or blame. That's a really hard one. You know how it is when we get blamed for something we didn't even do? We didn't do it, but we get blamed for it. You know how the ego jumps up and down when that happens. So to actually be able to just breathe and smile and not be upset by that, that's an amazing thing. As a solid mass of rock is not moved by the wind. That's an image, I think, that can be helpful to us when we see that what we are cannot ever be harmed by somebody else's words or by anything someone else does to us. As a deep lake is clear and undisturbed, so a sage becomes clear upon hearing the Dharma. This is an ancient metaphor that's very important, that the mind is like a lake, and very often the water's all turbulent because of the wind. The wind is our reaction to what's happening in the world. That stirs up the lake, and the water, you can't see very far down into the lake. So when the wind dies down, the water becomes very calm, like a mirror, and then the sediment all settles to the bottom, and suddenly there's clarity, and we can see the situation. So the idea is when our mind can be calm, we can actually practice to allow our mind to stay calm no matter what's happening in the outer world. Virtuous people always let go. They don't prattle about pleasures and desires. Touched by happiness and then by suffering, the sage shows no sign of being elated or depressed. As a person who would not wish for success by unethical means, not for the sake of oneself or for others, not with hopes for children or for wealth or for a kingdom, is a person of virtue, insight, and truth. So that's a very powerful statement just about the ends and the means. We don't, whatever it is that we think is, we want to have peace, but we're willing to go to war for it, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. We have to understand that the path is the goal. Few are the people who reach the other shore. Many are the people who run about on this shore. Okay, so I don't think I have to explain that, but the idea is that our life is an adventure to get to the other shore, and we can talk a long time about what that means, but it's not this shore. This shore is everything we think we know, right? This is our world that we think we know everything about. And the other shore is it's not anything we can actually conceive with our conditioned mind, and it's far better. But those who are in accord with the Dharma, with the well-taught Dharma, will go beyond the realm of death, so hard to cross. Giving up dark ways, sages cultivate the bright. They go from home to homelessness, to the solitude so hard to enjoy. There they should seek delight, abandoning sensual desires, having nothing. Sages should cleanse themselves of what defiles the mind. Those who fully cultivate the factors of awakening give up grasping, enjoy non-clinging, and have destroyed the toxins, are luminous and completely liberated in this life. So that's the end. And I think that that last part, basically what he obviously is emphasizing is to avoid the trap of grasping after sensual desires and of trying to be somebody, right? To have stuff, right? That I, if I can accumulate more things, more physical things, more, fame, more things I can put in my resume, you know, all these things. We were always trying to get more and more and more. And what he's saying is the sage is like letting go of every, letting it all go, having nothing, being nobody in a sense, really. If we're able to do that authentically, then we're destroying the toxins that, really in many ways block our ability to see clearly. So we are raised in a society really where virtually all of what he's saying is completely foreign to the way we're raised and how we live our lives. And we're taught the opposite. We're taught to be busy, to run about on this shore, getting more things, trying to show everybody what we've done and accomplished and so forth. And I think, you know, the underlying idea of what he's saying is that this is going to cause us a lot of suffering in the long run and cause other people suffering, because then we're caught in competition and judge and blame, and our mind is not peaceful. So what we're seeing, I think, now, as you've probably heard me say before, is the boomerang effect. So we've been sowing the seeds of domination and exploitation of animals and of ecosystems and of each other for hundreds of years. And now we have technology behind it. Now we have social media where we can all get likes and dislikes, and we can, I mean, it's very, very stressful, especially on young people. I heard a psychologist was just saying a couple of days ago that 25% in the United States, 25% of young people under the age of 16 are actively contemplating suicide, right? I mean, this is, or have, you know, either are actively contemplating it or have significantly contemplated it. So, I mean, these are numbers that are unheard of. It's never been so many people, young people, thinking about killing themselves. And this, I think, reflects a deep problem in our society, what we're talking about when we have technology and we have a loss of purpose and people are being kept away from each other in many ways, especially in the last year and a half or so, with the pandemic and everything. It's just created a lot more difficulty psychologically, I think. So now more than ever, I think it's critical for us as people who are dedicated to making a world of peace and harmony and justice and equality for all living beings to do the inner work and to talk about what's actually happening in our society and how we can each one of us be, as Gandhi said so well, this is all you can do, be the change that we would like to see in the world ourselves. So to be at peace and be a source of healing and inspiration and awakening, we ourselves are called to heal and awaken ourselves and to live a life that we feel is inspiring. And I think that challenge is enormous. I mean, it's enormously challenging because in some ways, we're finding, I think, what we're seeing is that forces are unleashed that in many ways turn our society into something, it's already been happening, but now it's just more obvious than ever that it's kind of like an insane asylum. Like now we have like really crazy things happening. And so, the political system, the corruption that we see, the disease spreading, the division between people, all of these things, right? So, I think the key here now is again, more than ever, to stay positive, to stay rooted in our true nature, that what we are is an eternal being that was never born and will never die. This is a lifetime that we're having. It's a tremendous opportunity. This earth is going through an unprecedented, unparalleled kind of transformational change. And so if we can bring our unique perspective without judging others, really just bring our unique perspective with compassion That's a great gift. And I don't think anyone can really judge ultimately what is the right message for someone else to be giving at this time. I mean, we can have our own, give our message, but I think, what we're seeing happening is that there's an official narrative that's being absolutely mandated and everything else is getting censored. So, the more I think we can question the official narrative, part of the official narrative is the domination of animals. The official narrative really revolves around the centralization of control and power in the hands of a few. You can tell if it's about big pharma, big Medica, big government, big financial institutions controlling everybody and everything, then that's something to be careful of, because power corrupts. And decentralized ways of doing things, that's nature. The way of nature is there's intelligence is distributed throughout the network. It's the opposite of that kind of centralized power. So each one of us can be a radiating center of intelligence and wisdom when and as we connect with our own intelligence and wisdom and connect with the dimension of consciousness that is not afraid. I think the more we can stay out of the fear that's being propagated all the time, it's really a pandemic of fear, the more we can contribute to the healing of our society. So I want to thank the Buddha for those words that hopefully can bring us back into a sense of being connected to the sage, you know, sage, the inner sage, our own inner wisdom, and maybe see the sages in our own lives around us to have discriminating wisdom so we can tell actually who are those that are the wise that we should emulate and who are those that we should avoid. Actually, that's quite an art of discrimination. So I'm going to stop here, and I would like to give a few minutes if people have questions or comments. I can't seem to talk less than 55 minutes, it seems like. It's weird how that happens. But anyway, if anyone would like to ask a question or make a comment or whatever, feel free. We also have the chat is open. If you want to put something in there, you can do that. And all in all, I just really want to say I love basking in the beauty of this group, and I know who's here, and you're all doing amazing work in your own ways, and you're all a huge inspiration to me, and I feel very humbled and grateful just to be on this planet with you all. So thank you, really, all of you so much for the many efforts that you're making in your own unique ways and making waves rippling out into the universe. There's lots of great things happening, and I think more, I think more will be happening. We're going to be called. I think we're being called to create a whole new game. I think that's really what's it. We're seeing that the game we've been playing is getting more and more like insane. It's like, we don't want to play this game anymore. So to step out and start playing our own game. And I think, what came up for me a little bit in that meditation of wanting to understand better myself is the word was community, like just how to create or what is it that will help create more communities of sanity and peace and freedom, and how do we create those communities, each one of us. There's being at this, at this place in Miami, there's a beautiful energy that's just exploding around this community that we saw there. And I think there's all kinds of things that perhaps can happen. So does anyone else have anything you'd like to share at this point? Just press *6 if you'd like to. You have a couple minutes.
Hey, what's going on, Will?
Hi.
Hi. I'm Chris. I was emailing you a few days ago.
Yes.
I just wanted to say it. Really enjoyed it. It's my first time coming on here, and it's nice to basically meet you, and because I loved your book, and I'm just thrilled to be here. I really enjoyed meditation and all your wise words, and I guess the question I had is, during the meditation, I just kind of probed into what I wanted better understanding of, and I just found myself crying, like, spontaneously. I've been vegan 2 years now, and at some point I started really repressing my feelings around the the tragedy going on. So I just was curious what you had to say about the importance of emotional intelligence and stuff when it comes to veganism and stuff, just to stay healthy in the long term.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Chris. Yeah, you know, bless your heart. That's a really incredibly important question. And a lot of times as vegans, we're face to face with the most horrific violence and abuse of sentient beings. And we can't stand it. I mean, it's so painful to know that these beautiful sentient beings, cows and pigs and chickens and all these animals, fishes are being, right now as we speak, are being horribly mutilated and abused and tremendous, and it's completely unnecessary, and it's pointless, and it's so devastating. And of course, it's a whole ocean, it's an ocean of suffering that, how can we not all just be weeping the whole time if we're really open to this? Tremendously debilitating in a certain sense if we're going to dwell on it all the time. And so I don't recommend dwelling on it all the time. I do think it's important to, for at least it has been for me, to watch videos, every year. I've been doing it for 40 years, watching these terrible videos, just to remind myself of what's happening, because it's easy to sort of forget. And to keep the flame alive of being a force for rescuing these beings who are being unnecessarily and horribly abused, and that we won't as human beings ever have a world of peace and harmony ourselves as long as we're doing this to animals. So, I think you're, contemplating of that question and your, weeping and your deep feelings are sacred, powerful responses to the reality of the situation. And I also want to say, though, that it's important to be able to use this skillfully, because the problem can happen. I've seen it with people, is that that can turn. If we don't act in an appropriate way, it can become a sense of bitterness and anger toward humanity and toward other human beings and people who are eating animal foods and so forth. And so we can get kind of sour and bitter, and that can really sap our physical and psychological health. So it's really important, I think, to realize that the fact that you're aware of this is a great gift. It's a kind of a cross to bear, but you're strong and you can carry it, and they can make you stronger. And then to turn it as best you can into an opportunity to give your life authenticity and meaning. And I really think, and I found this in 40 years of being a vegan activist, that there's a tremendous value to doing whatever we can to share this message in whatever way we feel is our unique way to do it. And I really strongly resist any person who says they're an expert in what's effective vegan activism. I have certain principles that I think are important, which are basically to try to embody veganism as love, so that I'm not trying to change other people by criticizing them in ways that makes them feel like, oh, here's another nasty, angry vegan, because I don't think that's necessarily effective. But really, if it's working for you, go for it. Really, I think to just turn the pain into action, that's the thing, to not let the pain that you're feeling, that sense of emotional compassion and empathy and the pain, really, of what it is, of the suffering of these animals, to turn it into some kind of meaningful action. And the action can be an overt action like writing, creating videos, talking to people, creating a course, doing music, whatever it is. It can also be just sitting quietly and sending and meditating and sending love to all the slaughterhouse workers and the animals and who are locked in a terrible situation, and all the human beings. I mean, ultimately, I think the deeper we go with this, we see that there's really no one to blame. This is a system we're born into. It's a system. People are buying animal foods or taught to do that by their parents, who are taught by their parents, and it's like you see the bigger picture, and then you can say, all right, it's been going for 10,000 years. Now I can do my best to just not contribute to it and to try to plant seeds of kindness and compassion and wake up in the morning, you know, giving thanks, you know, stay positive. It's really important to do that, to give thanks the first thought. A lot of people, I think, they have the first thought of, oh no, more animals are going to get killed today. What a terrible day, you know. And the thing is, if we say that, you know, our cells of our body, they follow whatever our thoughts tell us, you know. So if I'm saying that, if I'm saying, oh no, another terrible day where a lot of animals are going to get killed, then I'm telling all my cells, all right, everybody, you know, there's no point in feeding the heart, no point in digesting the food, you know, because it's just another terrible day. And so we find that our physical health deteriorates, really. And so if we wake up and go, wow, another day I can be part of the solution to help create a world of peace and freedom and abundance for the celebration of all beings and to liberate animals and to liberate all of us. I can't wait to see what great things can happen today, what great creative ideas will happen. And all the cells in our body going, wow, another great day. Let's digest the food and pump the heart and make the brain jump alive and have creative thoughts. You know, I mean, we're really a community. Each one of us is a community of bacteria, viruses, and cells and so forth. And our health is important to the animals, right? I mean, if all the vegan activists wake up feeling terrible about all the bad things, then pretty soon they're all burning out. I've seen so many vegan activists burn out. I mean, I've been a vegan activist for 40 years, and I'm far from burning out because I just feel so grateful that I can do something, you know, to help a little bit. And it was so neat yesterday giving this lecture and having this lady say, yeah, I read your book and I went vegan, and it happens. I mean, it does work. So I think, you know, just do the best you can to take in, you know, find your own unique path. I guess that's the thing, you know, but to turn it into action. That's what I found, into some kind of creative action, either physical in the world or in consciousness, and to create a positive foundation for all, to hold the pain, to create a deeper foundation, that you know. That's why I think meditation is so important, because I think when we go deep enough into the silence, we can get a glimpse of the infinite life that is our true nature. The infinite, I say the sky. It's like this infinite sky, which is radiant and unstainable. No number of clouds are ever going to wound the sky. The sky is in another dimension completely than the clouds. And that's what we are. So we're here, those clouds can seem really real. They can say, oh my gosh, you know, it's my pain, my suffering, my anxiety and so forth. But if we can get quiet to the point we realize we're the sky, then we can just wear these things. Like, they're not that big a thing, the pain. And there's great stories about this. There's, you know, the great yogi Milarepa, he was really sick toward the end of his life. He had a sickness. It was probably something he took on. And he was talking to his disciples about it. He's saying, I'm carrying a disease that's, you know, my body's in enormous pain. And they say, well, you don't look like you're in that much pain. He said, I know, but I am. My body is, but I know the truth of what I am. And then there was this, some that were doubting him, and they were sort of competing with him. They were like sorcerers, and they started making fun of him and saying, yeah, you're just talking, you're just pretending that you have this great pain that you're carrying. It doesn't look like it's any great pain that you're carrying. And then he said, well, it's a pretty big pain. He said, I'll show you, I'll take the pain, I'll just put it in that tree over there. So he just projected his pain into this tree, and the tree started shaking, and all the bark flew off. And they all went, whoa. And then he took the pain back onto his own body again and smiled at them. And then these sorcerers, they said, oh, you just did a trick. You know, you just made the tree shake. You know, anybody can do that. And he said, well, would you like me to just send the pain that I'm experiencing over to you? And the sorcerer said, yeah, sure, go ahead. So he did. So he sent it over to this guy, and this guy's like rolling on the ground, screaming, stop, ah. So then Milarepa takes it back again. And so everybody looked on and they could see. So but the underlying idea is that, you know, the bigger we grow in our wisdom of being able to understand the truth of what's happening, the more we can take on pain in a sense, and it won't like freak us out. It's like we can carry it. So the idea is to just expand and give thanks for this opportunity as a human being to give whatever we can in this lifetime that we have. I'm going on too long here, but anyway, sorry about that, everybody. But I think, you know, it's a beautiful question you asked, and I think we don't want to ever stifle our emotions. I mean, we're human beings, and feelings are really a critical part. When the Buddha says that, you know, he's not moved by praise or blame and that kind of thing, he's not suppressing these feelings. He's actually realizing his true nature beyond those. And I think it doesn't mean we become like unfeeling robots. We have compassion. And there's all these stories of the Buddha in his previous lifetimes, like when he saw a tiger that was hungry, he had compassion on the tiger and he offered his body and fed the tiger his body. He said, here, eat me, you know, it's okay. You know, I'll get another body in my next life. Don't worry about it. You know, so, I mean, the idea is that we, you know, we go through perhaps many, many lifetimes of learning and growing, and they've brought us to where we are now. And to just be authentic in this life, just be authentically who we are, our unique being, as best we can, and that is our path forward. And no one else can ever tell anybody else really what they should do. That's a very personal thing. And we can just essentially support each other with our kindness and our love. And I think that's the most important thing. So thank you, Christopher. It's really great to see you. And thanks for your question. I think I'm going to stop here. This has been a great sharing. I really appreciate everyone. I mean, I hope you think it was a great sharing. It was whatever it was, but I'm grateful for the opportunity. And we, as you know, we have the third Thursday. We have our Rope Side Circle, which will be in a couple of weeks. We'll go and we can go more deeply into the nitty gritty of what's actually happening in the world. These are crazy times. I mean, they're just really wild. And, there's all kinds of political overtones to everything. So I want to try to just stay on the spiritual level here and just remember each one of us to be our truth, to whatever you feel, to let that radiate into the world, your highest version of yourself. And when we do that, I think we raise the tide for everyone. We raise all the boats. So much love to all of you. Thanks again for joining us. I see there's a few comments also to Christopher in the chat, which I'm sure are helpful. And maybe we can just close our call with the prayer that we like to say at noon, the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. It goes, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. So let's say that together. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. One more time. Compassion
encircles the earth for all beings everywhere.
Beautiful. Thank you all so much. Much love to you from Madeline also. Go forth and multiply the message, and we look forward to our paths crossing again. Stay in touch. Much love to all of you. Thanks again. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks.